So the point tonight, make a couple of comments to start us off. So we know where we're trying to go with this series of slides on, that are going to be on the wall behind me here. The revelation, the fifth ethical revelation, presents, I guess you'd have to say, definitely the greatest challenge to mankind that's ever been put before us. It's an extreme challenge. And that's reflected in how it came to be. A group of individuals in the universe were commissioned to take the totality of reality, to take infinity, and condense it down into a book that we can hold in our hands. That in itself, just the quantitative aspect of it, should remind you of what kind of a challenge they put in front of you to try to really take yourself from where we all begin on this benighted sphere, very ignorant. We all begin hopelessly ignorant. To take yourself from that state to where they would like to lead you. Jesus foreshadowed this. That, you know, he said, I find you in this very limited state and I would lead you up to recognition and realization and appreciation. And then upon that new foundation, that new objective foundation, you can discover the true love that you have always known was possible. So, what exactly, what are the specifics of that? When I say it's a huge challenge, not just that quantitative, but the qualitative. There's a quality of consciousness that the revelators are challenging us to at least begin to discover. A quality of consciousness that mankind has never even remotely imagined was possible. They tell you that we're quivering on the very brink of an age when we're all going to be really, really challenging ourselves to have greater and greater quality of thinking. And this is the means. The fifth ethical revelation is the means to that end. It doesn't just happen magically. Someone didn't just flick a switch on high and boom, we all have quality of thinking. So how do we go about that? Let's just slowly work our way into that specific issue of how can I be, like I alluded to this morning, how can I begin to make that transition from the firm knowledge that I'm a child of God? How can I get myself through adolescence and start to really try to be a growing adult of God? You're not gonna be a very advanced adult anytime soon. How can you really start that process? Remember how it tells you, God wants you to start as a child, but he doesn't want you to stay there forever. He wants you to start moving as soon as you can. Okay, so that thought right there on that slide is the spark to start it. Logical consistency versus personal creativity. I can tell you that that's the beginning, but it doesn't mean anything. It's just a set of words. Where do we start? What does that really mean? Let's dig into it. Let's go to the first slide. Personal creativity. Because we're all given a personality, as soon as someone says creativity, that should spark some thoughts in your head. Even the children of God have some pretty definitive thoughts percolating about personal creativity. Specifically, where does it come from? Personal creativity is an expression of your individual relationship with God the Father. Like I said, it's coming from personality. That individual, one-on-one, absolutely no one else in the universe except God and you in that individual relationship. God the Father and you. Let's look at this little passage of how the relishers speak about that incredible individual relationship. Personality inherently reaches out to unify all constituent realities. Such unifying creativity of all creature personality is a birthmark of its high and exclusive source, and is further evidential of its unbroken contact with this same source through the personality circuit, by means of which the personality of the creature maintains direct and sustaining contact with the father of all personality on paradise. Well, that's a heck of a lot more than anyone has ever spoken to the truth of that relationship between you and God the Father ever. That's a pretty incredible revelation. I mean, look at high and exclusive source, direct and sustaining contact. Okay, I'm told that, and I'm thinking, whoa, maybe I'm really, really something amazing in this universe. Maybe I'm already an adult of God. That sounds, I mean, if it's a high and exclusive source and it's a direct and sustaining contact, I mean, it must be dumb already, right? Well, but just because of that, is your creativity therefore divine? Are you really done? When you start, the moment you choose to recognize that you're a child of God? What else does it say? Personality is inherently creative, but it thus functions only in the inner life of the individual. It is the creativity of the inner world that is most subject to your direction, because there your personality is so largely liberated from the fetters of the laws of antecedent causation. There rests upon each person the responsibility of choosing as to whether this creativity shall be spontaneous and wholly haphazard, or controlled, directive, and constructive. Okay, well, it's pretty obvious what the answer to that previous question was. Creativity is not innately divine. There rests upon, okay, you must choose its conformity with the cosmos. Yes, you have this incredible potential for personal creativity, but you must choose. And look at this, just note as we go forward. Remember some of the things they're alluding to right here. Words like responsibility, control, personal responsibility, self-control. And that's the real key behind that little warning they're putting out there about this incredible gift of personal creativity. What about this conformity with the cosmos? What does that mean? And why did I word it that way? You know, I don't see those words exactly there. Let's see. Let's go forward, not sure. Let's look at the other side of the equation. The other thing in that title was logical consistency. Logical consistency is something quite different from personal creativity. Logical consistency is a reflection of your cosmic relationship with God the Mother. Father and you have an individual relationship. You don't have an individual relationship with God the Mother. You have a cosmic relationship. For the first time in human history, we have a revelation of the greater aspects of God. Yes, there's the facet of God that we've long recognized as God the Father, and this is the fifth epical revelation about the truth of God the Father and your relationship to God the Father. But the fifth epical revelation is also the first epical revelation of the nature of the cosmos. And the fact that you have another kind of relationship besides that laser beam-like direct relationship with God the Father, one-to-one. You have a relationship to the whole. And consequently, the individuality of that whole, God the Mother. God the Mother is the individuality of that whole. And because there is an individuality of that whole, the whole universe, the whole totality of reality, inherent in the whole is cosmos. A Greek word that means both universe and harmony equally. There is a universal harmony. And you can begin to cultivate a relationship with that universal harmony because you now know, because it's been revealed to us finally, clearly for the first time, that you have a relationship with that whole that you can cultivate. And it's going to give you something more than personal creativity. It's going to give you this much less immediately understandable thing called logical consistency. Take a look at this little quote here about what the challenge, like I was saying, that's in front of us. The partially evolved mental mechanism of mortal man is not over-endowed with consistency and wisdom. Yeah, that's a technique called understatement. That wasn't quite clear. Not over and out. Okay? And on a benighted sphere, okay.
Do the mask.
Everyone needs to swallow really hard. Okay? This is not going to be easy. Because we have almost nothing to start with here. Okay? Look at the rest of that passage. Man's conceit often outruns his reason and eludes his logic. And I just, it's such a gorgeous sentence. I had to annotate it a little bit here. See, this is a beautiful craftsmanship of language. The relatives are masters. Those of us who, you know, were schooled in modern times are not that aware of the real meanings of words. That word conceit, you know, it's taken on, you know, what everyone kind of automatically thinks of, this very negative, self-centered thing. More fundamentally, and what the relatives mean by it here, it means a flight of imagination. That's fundamentally what conceit is. Well, where do you get the ability to have a flight of imagination? From your personal creativity. That gift that God dumped into your, you know, into your mind. You know, without an instruction manual. Yeah? And the word elude, the E is like EX, before an L you drop the X. It literally means out. And elude, if you play, the literal meaning of that word is out of play. See, the real, you know, so reread it again. Man's flight of imagination often outruns his reason and outplays his logic. It's a beautiful sentence. Poetry and precision. No one's ever done it like the relatives do it. Okay. This outruns his reason. Okay. Through your subjective adjutant mind, gives you ability to reason. Okay. If you're really clever, your flight of imagination and your running reason here might actually be, you know, kind of side by side on the course. And if you're really smart, you can keep that reason up with that flight of imagination. Okay? So, you know, if you've got a clever enough subjective adjutant mind, you can give your personal creativity rational consistency. But what about that outplays his logic? Okay? But this does not imply that it also has logical consistency. It's automatically have this relationship with the whole cosmos. let alone the individuality and the personalization of that individuality of the whole God and Mother. Back in that first quote we read, it told us this about personal creativity. Personal creativity seeks unity. That whole, you know, why did God give you creativity? That's why. So that you would have an automatic tendency to seek unity. You know, your spiritual consciousness burns for unity. That's your unity consciousness. It's seeking it, you know, it's wishful thinking it all the time. You know, if it can't see it, it imagines it. You know, because it wants it to be one. But, okay, this is all happening in, you know, your relationship to spirit. What about mind? But mind can never succeed in this unification of the diversity of reality unless such mind is firmly aware of material things, intellectual meanings, and spiritual values. Only in the harmony of the triunity of functional reality is there unity. And only in unity is there the personality satisfaction of the realization of cosmic constancy and consistency. A lot of thoughts there. Start with the first part. Things, meanings, values, matter, mind, spirit. Anyone who's been around me for any length of time or has ever watched a video of that chart that sits next to me in study group every Friday night knows that the title of that chart is Threefold Actuality with Unity. Threefold Actuality with Unity. Yeah. You and I are not Havona beings. You don't just go boom, right to unity. Only in the harmony of the triunity of functional reality, out here in the super universe domain, is there unity. That unity that your person, your personality craves and seeks, can't be found like that consciousness imagines by fiat. You don't just grab a hold of the unity cord out of the cosmos and plug it in. You have to try to figure out how to take a threefold actuality and harmonize it into a triunity of functional reality. Okay? And no one has ever even known that this is what you had to do. But there's finally an owner's manual to man. And for men, fifth ethical revelation is finally revealing this truth. Why? Because it's time we are about being more than a mere child of God. About being a beginning. We need to start going beyond the beginning. Not only is it time for you individually to start to grow, but the planet needs cosmic conscious people. Governments need cosmic conscious citizens. Because unity by fiat is not going to solve all those complicated problems of things that have to be connected through meanings to values. This firm awareness of threefold actuality is available through the objective insight of the three cosmic intuitions in the Holy Spirit. We're given the gift of the Holy Spirit without having to ask for it. And everyone in this room at roughly age six was encircled in the Holy Spirit. And within that Holy Spirit are the three cosmic intuitions that connect you to the objectivity of things, meanings, and values. Matter, mind, and spirit, etc. That whole threefold actuality. When you go to paper 16, section 6, when they introduce the three cosmic intuitions, they call them the reality response. If you're exposed to reality, not what someone says is reality, but actually exposed to reality, you have the ability, by that gift given to you by grace alone, the Holy Spirit, you have the ability to recognize it as such. If you choose to develop those eyes to see objectively, the insight, to see through to the reality of it, that, yeah, that is real. I can feel it. Okay? So you can recognize this harmony of the triunity of functional reality, but where do I find the harmony in the first place? I mean, I know now that I can recognize it because I have the three cosmic intuitions, but, you know, it's not going to fall in my lap, I don't think, probably. I got to look for it somewhere. Where is it? Is it in the world somewhere? No, it's not. Where? You know, when you look out in the world, what do you see? You don't see harmony. Yeah? Unless, you know, you're closing your eyes and using that imagination a lot. Okay? Not actually there. If, where do I find that? It says I can recognize it, but where do I find it in the first place? Next slide. We'll come back to that issue in a minute. First, let's finish up the rest of the title. We have personal creativity, we have logical consistency, and they're connected by the word versus. Okay? Well, versus, has, we use that Latin word in two senses. In contest against, and in contrast with. Which is it? Which does Chris mean? What's that title mean? Well, it's obvious from what we've just gone through. Logical consistency is not in contest against personal creativity, such as plaintiff versus defendant, but it must be recognized in contrast with personal creativity. Logical consistency is not automatically contained, you know, inherent within personal creativity. It's a separate thing. There's God the Father and His gift and relationship to you, and there's God the Mother. And your choice to begin to cultivate that relationship separate. Personality, your personal creativity is made true through logical consistency. Conformity with the cosmos. That's what conformity with the cosmos means. It's when we use the word true, you know, like if you're making sure a board is true or something, if you're a carpenter, okay? Are you right with the cosmos? Are you true? Do you conform to the cosmos? Okay. Certainly not in a benighted sphere. It's not going to happen automatically. It's not like an Avona. That's built in. Okay? Your thoughts are rational if they are reasoned. But they are logical only if they are correctly reasoned. For the first time in human history, there's a clear discussion that we can challenge ourselves to understand that differentiates between the word rational and the word logical. Okay? If you look it up in the dictionary, it's pretty fuzzy. The revelation now challenges us to recognize that just because you can reason and make things rational, string them together, connect the dots, doesn't mean that you know every dot to dot conforms to the cosmos. If for no other reason, if I just I cultivate my deductive reasoning where I start at some point and I go A implies B implies C implies D and I get this wonderful little string of dots that I connect together, well, but who says A conforms to the cosmos? How do you know you have the right starting point? How do you know it's correctly reasoned? You might be the smartest person that ever lived, but if you have no ability to start with the correct initial assumption, all of that intellect is for nothing. Because it's not correctly reasoned. Okay, let's penetrate a little bit more before you turn. Like I said up front, this is where we all have to look deep within ourselves and find a new humility that mankind, like I said, has never been challenged to have before. This process of being able to begin to correctly reason so that we can actually solve problems and not just rationalize them and then believe our rationalizations. This is very difficult. And most fundamentally, why? Because of a very nagging problem. Self-sophistry. Fallacy is deceptive, but sophistry is seductive. Sophistry is a fallacy that's wrapped in spiritual candy. Now, if you didn't have a spiritual consciousness, you wouldn't be susceptible to that seduction of that spiritual candy. But you do have a spiritual consciousness. If for no other reason, a great being came 2,000 years ago and gave us a spiritual uplift, encouraged everyone to awaken that spiritual consciousness. So here we are now. More than ever before in human history, there's this seduction of self. You fall in love with yourself. How does this play out? Have you had the thought or said, well, that's what you think, but I think. Why are you interested in what you think? Your self-view. Do you consider your thoughts to be authoritative? Of all the perplexing problems growing out of the Lucifer Rebellion, none has occasioned more difficulty than the failure of immature evolutionary mortals to distinguish between true and false liberty. Your personal creativity gives you the awareness and the ability to act upon liberty. Okay. But it's not automatically true. You have to choose to make it true, conform with the cosmos. Fundamentally, what's the difference between true and false liberty? True liberty is predicated on personal responsibility and self-control. Yourself is not something to be listened to. Yourself is something to be parented. Yourself is something to be controlled. First, you need to be a self-changer, then you need to be a self-adjuster, and then finally, you will be a self-controller. Yourself is not innately divine. It's the Pied Piper. It's very seductive.
Chris, a real quick simplicity that I've heard once is that when you're hanging out in your own head, you're hanging out in a bad neighborhood.
Right. Keep all these things in mind. I want your thoughts to be really percolating on this. You know, we're gonna have a good discussion about this afterwards. You know? Be honest with yourself. Think about that first statement. You heard those thoughts in your head. Doesn't make you bad. We're immature children. Unless you think you are an adult of God. Yeah, go to the next one. How about we recognize the title on this one? Revelation or affirmation? Here's what's in front of you. Do you hold to the Arash papers as the fifth ethical revelation of truth? Or do you point to them as an affirmation of your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices? Well, I don't have those things. Yes, you do. That's how we're all born. We're born and quickly develop preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices because we're not automatically conformal to the cosmos. We start with nothing but subjective mind, basically, especially pre-six-year-old. There's a reason why they put that in, that, you know, in Adjuster Paper 109 there. That's where we are. We've got to ask ourselves this question. Do you just use that big blue book as affirmation? Or do you hold to it as revelation? Do you subject your thoughts to critical examination? Ruthless, critical examination in the light of the revelation. Do you strive to think like the revelators, to reform your mind toward harmony? Or do you prefer yourself and all of these comfortable things that it had before you found the revelation? Choose this day. Yeah. So let's follow up a little bit more on that harmony. Like we pointed out up front, we have the ability to recognize that harmony of that triunity. But where do we find it? When you wrap your mind around this notion that they introduce in the fifth epical revelation that they call moda, you can sum it up in a sentence like this. Moda is the Maracha mind motion which can view the cosmic system of harmony. Why did I use that word? Moda is a Latin word. You have three Latin gerunds derived from the verb in Latin for to move. Moda is a feminine gerund. It fundamentally means inherent motion. That's what the word moda means. Not some, you know, airy-fairy word. It's a literal Latin word. They're using it. The Latins, and it's interesting to note, the Latins never use that. You know, you automatically have masculine, feminine, gender, and neuter and whenever you create a gerund in Latin. And motus is the masculine. That's overt, directed motion. The Latins use that. You know, like if I throw a baseball, that's motus. It's the motion of that ball across the room. The other two are there, mota and motum, but they never use it. The revelator said, there's a pre-existent word, perfect. Because that is the real truth of the universe. It's not a static universe. It's an inherently dynamic universe. If for no other reason, you know that's true through your connection with God the Father. Because long ago, long before you and I were born, people testified that our God is a living God. Inherently dynamic. And if that God is the first source and center of all things and beings, everything is inherently dynamic. That which is static is unreal, is dead, is non-existent. Okay? They're telling you that in your next life, when you have a Maracha mind, there's going to be a motion in that mind that syncs up with the cosmic system of harmony. And then it says, faith and reason, unaided by moda, cannot conceive and construct a logical universe. Well, that's a very disheartening statement. Okay? So if I don't have a Maracha mind, and I don't have moda, not only can I construct a logical universe, that whole goal of, you know, syncing up with that harmony of the triunity of and functional reality, I can't even conceive it. Right now it is impossible for you and I to even conceive that which we must be moving toward. That relationship with the cosmos, that relationship with God the Mother. So, I mean, every time in human history when someone thought that they maybe knew what harmony meant or something like that, no. I'm telling you, no. You don't have the slightest idea. You can't even conceive of what we're talking about here. There's only one way. You can search the world over, you will not find it. There's only one way that you can have that harmony put in front of you and then use your cosmic intuitions to recognize it for what it is. Revelation is the only technique which can compensate for the absence of the truth sensitivity of moda in a material world. Revelation compensates for the absence of the Maranja viewpoint by providing a technique for achieving unity in the comprehension of the reality and relationships of matter and spirit by the mediation of mind, the threefold actuality, matter, mind, and spirit. If that big blue book is only affirmation and not revelation to you, if yourself is still first, it's hopeless. Okay.
Well, you can't
only create, technique.
Can't you create an illogical universe?
Not only can you, but that's the only thing that you will do. It is impossible to not create an illogical universe without the revelation. Everyone who's tried in all of human history to do it without revelation has created an illogical universe. Now, they're not, bizarre, schizophrenic, whatever. You know, they're rational universes that people have created. Many people have created rational universes. But see, this is what the revelators are trying to do. They're saying, that word logical, I want you to break it free from that word rational. And I mean really, really break it free. You have no idea yet what the word logical really means. It's as deeply far from you as the reality of what the word personality really means. Personality is not self. It's infinitely more. And logical is not merely rational. It's transcendently more. You must challenge yourselves to have the courage to face that that's your starting point. To begin to look deep within yourself and ask some tough questions about the way you've been thinking. Or, if you're not ready for that, that's too big a challenge. You need to start with something smaller than the fifth epical revelation. Because that's what the fifth epical revelation is. The greatest challenge mankind has ever faced. Actually, back it up a second. Got to point out the transition. Notice that in both of those sentences, you know, in two different papers, they chose to use the word technique. Okay? Revelation is the only technique. Okay? You know, if your spiritual consciousness, when it sees a word like technique, this doesn't ring any bells. Okay? Technique, isn't that where you're really being precise and there's a definitive method and you know, and can I just love? Can it just be easy? No, I say no. It's You have to discover the technique that's inherent in Revelation. What is that technique? We're going to give it a name right up front. The true scientific method. Anyone's ever heard of that probably is not feeling too happy right now. That doesn't seem very satisfying either. And the Revelators know that. Look what regarding what is commonly called the quote unquote scientific method, the Midwayers say the scientific method, quote unquote, it's in quotes like that in the book for a reason, is merely an intellectual yardstick wherewith to measure material adventures and physical achievements. But being material and wholly intellectual, it is utterly useless in the evaluation of spiritual realities and religious experiences. Yep, I know, I knew that. That's why I don't do that science stuff. It's nothing for my spiritual consciousness. I'm all about this stuff. My only spirit thing. Okay. Everything has changed. There's a reason why they put that in quotes. Quote unquote scientific method. The so-called scientific method. The fifth epical revelation permits us to expand this technique so that it is not merely material and wholly intellectual. Never before in human history has such an incredible thing been possible. But now is. The primary intent behind the scientific method is to militate against the difficult facts that subjectively you can rationalize anything. And you can believe anything. You know, and if you don't think that you can rationalize anything, go find a smarter person who can and believe their rationalization. Because I guarantee you, there's people a lot smarter than me who can create a lot more clever rationalizations that can connect the dots between anything and anything else. You can always rationalize. It means nothing. This whole key of the scientific method, the key is to attempt to refute an idea rather than to look for confirmations. This is the key core of the technique. And now it can go beyond the merely material, wholly intellectual. And again, you can find confirmations of anything. Any idea. Oh, but the idea is wrong. Again, are you really willing to underestimate personal creativity like that? Consider its source. Where does personal creativity come from? It comes from the infinite source. Personal creativity is potentially infinite. Okay? Personal creativity, if it's, you know, well developed enough, can always find confirmations. And you can use that big blue book, like that. You can start with anything in your head and you can find the confirmation of it in the book. It means absolutely nothing. Okay? The question is refuting an idea, not confirming it. That's the key behind the scientific method. If an idea has resisted extensive attempts to disprove it, then it is worthy of some measure of belief, mental acceptance. The whole point, like I said, is to militate against these very difficult facts. Long ago, people who wanted to try to find objective reality, at least in the material domains, knew they had to try to somehow work against this incessant clamoring of inescapable self to rationalize and believe. You know? And for long ages, there's been this dichotomy argument between these two about which is right. Do you rationalize and then believe your rationalizations? Or do you believe and then rationalize your beliefs? And people have written endless books on which is right. Well, neither is right. Eh? It's just, you're a flatlander, you're in a plane, you have no relationship with the cosmos, the vertical, you know, the three-dimensional cosmos. And the question is, okay, is it better to go around the circle this way or this way? Which way do I chase my tail? Oh, well, this way is right and this way is wrong. I don't feel any ascension happening here. No. Technique. You need a technique to break free from the tail chasing, no matter which way you have an initial tendency to think is the right way. Okay? This is the key. With the revelation, now all ideas, not just scientific ideas, can be tested for truth. Before you put forth an idea, use the revelation to attempt to refute it. Don't look for confirmations. Use the revelation to attempt to refute your idea. Test even the words you use. Does your use of language conform with the cosmos? That's the kind of precision that's in the fifth epical revelation. We need that kind of precision. We need that kind of depth of relationship to the cosmos. If they've given us a person who merely spoke, we couldn't have gotten that. Only through that book can you get something where you can challenge yourself to conform your words even to the cosmos. How does a revelation use that word? Do I have any concept what that word actually means? You dig into it, oh, no, I don't actually, now that I see what they're telling me, how they use that word. Courage now. You need courage. Go take it all the way. If your idea can withstand the full critique of every paragraph in the Urantia book, then maybe some truth flows through it. How different is that from where mankind is? This is not just readers of the fifth epical revelation. All of mankind is laboring in the wake of the Lucifer rebellion. You know, imagining the truth flows through their ideas. Just imagine. Anyone can imagine. Okay? But this is the reality of it. This is the truth of truth. Okay? There's a reason why when you go to a good dictionary today, it still quotes Pontius Pilate. Quid est veritas? What is truth? The authors of that dictionary do not know. No one has ever known. No one has even been able to conceive prior to the fifth epical revelation what that really means. You've had only the slightest inklings. You know, wait a minute, I think I have lots of truth. Just like you could think you have lots and lots of personality. I've actualized the fullness of infinity already. You know, no, you haven't. I mean, now that you know what personality really is, of course I haven't done that. Have I actually bridged the entire gap between me and the first source and center of all things? Of course you haven't. Okay? The same is true about truth. You've barely begun to even know what the word means. And this should not make you feel bad about yourself, because it's not just being told to you. They didn't just say it and run. And left us the fifth epical revelation. I can hold it in my hands. I can take it at my pace. But I know what I'm trying to do. I don't care what I think. I want to know what they think. I want to conform my consciousness to the cosmos. I'm not afraid anymore. Fear not, said the Master. Don't be afraid to recognize your humble starting point. And then boldly go forth in humility to discover the real universe. Discover that, what they tell you in the religion papers, when you put true in front of scientific, it's nothing like you imagine it is now anymore. Because just like if you put true in front of the word religion, it's no longer anything that mankind has really ever conceived. Because true religion is one with true science and true philosophy. There is a a triunity. They're one. Your true relationship with religion is automatically a true relationship with the individuality of the cosmos, the science of the cosmos, the knowledge of the cosmos. Okay? That's why you can now expand it like this. I can actually ask the question now. I believe I've had a religious experience. I can test it for truth. I can take the revelation and I can challenge it. I can do this. I can attempt to refute that with the revelation. Now that's sounding pretty scary. Wait a minute, that's my personal religious experiences, those are my personal spiritual experiences, my religious experiences, those are mine and mine alone, and no one has any right to be challenging those. Yes and no. Because remember, you want to be challenging yourself to have a religious experience that's more than merely the religious experience of a child. There's no need to challenge the religious experience of a child. But there is a need to challenge that growing adult of God. Because it's not just that little faint flicker that is given to you by grace alone. You know it is true. It needs no challenge. But what if I want to start to turn up the gas and not be just a faint flicker anymore? I've got to turn up. I'm involved. Okay? There's a knob that I have to turn now. Do I just crank it? What do I do? Okay? It's not just by grace alone. Okay? You need the revelation to become an adult of God. Because it's saying, okay, well, how about like this? Oh, that immediately fails the truth test of the revelation. No, it's not. I can learn by looking. I don't have to actually turn it and see what happens. I can learn by looking because I have the revelation. I don't have to learn by leaping. Remember that passage? We're trying to challenge ourselves to not just be tadpoles anymore. Okay? And it takes a technique. That technique is the revelation. This is why the revelation means so much to me. I can now put everything to the test. I don't want to know what I think. I want to know what really is. I want to know what really is spiritually. And I want to know what really is physically. What's fundamental physics, really? But what's spirit, really, too? And everything in between. And the revelation gives us that ability. It's high time that those who have discovered the revelation take up this challenge. You know you're a child of God. Jesus told you so 2,000 years ago. Now let's go. Let's put that to work. Like we now know that he challenged them long ago, but they couldn't understand. Let's begin to recognize the cosmos. Let's begin to realize the cosmos. Let's begin to appreciate the cosmos that I'm a part of, that I'm a cosmic citizen. It's been revealed now that I am a cosmic citizen. I'm not just a child of God. Why would I want to go to that? Because I want to really, truly love. I don't want the relatives to wince when I consciousize that word in my mind. Remember what they tell you? They can barely bring themselves to use those four letters because of our just horrendous ignorance of what those four letters really could mean, way up there beyond recognition, realization, and appreciation. So there it is. That's why I so often point to that passage in Paper 16, Section 6. This is the reality of what confronts us as we challenge to become adults of God. But it's sad to record that so few persons on your rancho take delight in cultivating these qualities of courageous and independent cosmic thinking. And I hope after this you have a little better appreciation of just how much courage it's going to take to really see yourself where you are right now and what a challenge is in front of you. But you can fear not, and you can begin.